It's time. It's time to open your eyes. It's time to open your mind. It's time to grow up and face reality. It's time to lock and load because it's Meat Trapper time. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 210 of Meat Trapper Radio. I am just off the boat here from the Western Kentucky COVID convention up in Wingo, Kentucky, and it was a very hot, very humid, very productive experience. And the first thing I want to do is I just want to say it was good to meet each and every one of you that were able to make it. You know who you are. And I appreciate you coming out, and I appreciate you looking me up and shaking my hand and introducing yourself. And for a couple of you, it was good to see you again. Last time I had seen you was over at the Southeastern NTA in Crossville, and some even farther back than that. And I'd also, of course, like to thank Mr. Brian McKee of SouthernSnares.com, not only for sponsoring this broadcast, but for driving all the way from South Georgia to Western Kentucky to set up a booth. And he also sponsored some giveaways for the kids, including the Rossi rifle that was won by a young man. So that was great stuff. And I also want to thank the Patreon member, Eric, for his kind and generous donation of books and trapping DVDs. I was able to make up some grab bags and give those out at my demo. So that was, just a great example of generosity all around, and a true testament to the kind of people that are involved here at Patreon and that are involved in trapping in general. Now, on the second half of tonight's show for the Patreon members, I'm going to give you an update on the general state of affairs in the trapping industry and some of the disturbing trends that I'm seeing, and I'm going to give you some heads up on some things that you need to perhaps go ahead and stock up on and get prepared, because there's some things coming down the pipe that you may not be expecting. But the first topic that I want to talk about tonight, we have been talking a lot about small craft, small boats. I did an episode recently on canoes and kayaks and skiffs and larger boats, and sort of shared, my experience and my opinion on that. Now, Joe up in Virginia, who has very, very extensive experience up around the Chesapeake, and believe me, when I say this man knows his boats, trust me, he knows his boats. And he has been a great help to me here lately. And he's given me an education on how to look at used boats, how to size them up, how to value them, and exactly how to put them together component by component to come to a fair value on a used boat. But he had a sort of a rebuttal to some of the things that I had to say on small craft, and so I want to play that, and then I want to address some of his points, because I think I may have been a little not completely clear on my views. So anyway, this is a great segment from Joe, and if you ever have been interested in skiffs or ginus, and you're like me, and you want to know what the difference between the High Cider and the classic and the Ginu Custom and the LT25 and the LT10, because if you've ever tried looking at Ginus, you've got everything from $1,000 Ginus to $25,000 Ginus and everything in between, and it just becomes a maze. So I think this is going to be a great segment, and I know it really helped illuminate things for me. So let's hear what Joe had to say.
All right, it's Joe from Virginia. Tim said something last week I mildly disagree with. I wanted to submit my rebuttal and also a synopsis on the GNU. So Tim said last week that if you're going to go to essentially a small skiff with an outboard, you might as well go to a big boat. So I'm considering a well-equipped GNU as a small boat, and I'm considering a 17-foot center console as a big boat. So in my part of the world on the Chesapeake, a 17-foot center console is pretty standard, somewhere between 17 and 20. A 17 to 20-foot center console with somewhere in the range of a 70 to 150 outboard, it's going to cost you a few grand a year to keep that thing up and running. It's going to take a bigger trailer. It might take a bigger truck. You got things like bilge pumps. You got more electronics. You got more lights. The motors take more in maintenance and upkeep. There's more parts to them. So, personally, I think a lot of people would be served by a small skiff. But to step up to the next level, 17 to 20 foot class. I mean, that's a significant step in investment and in maintenance and upkeep. In my area, something that's in the middle would be like a 14 foot crabbing skiff, and they come like 14 to 16 feet, flat bottom skiff, fiberglass, usually in the range of a 25 to 40 on it. That's a pretty good happy medium. You could carry a ton of weight in them. They do pretty good for near shore, inshore fishing in the rivers, crabbing, your other stuff like trapping. They actually work pretty good for that. I'm gonna stick with my Ginu, and even I'm ready to upgrade from it now, but I'm just going to the next size bigger. So the Ginus were made by a game not guy named Harry Gein in Florida. And I think his sons even still run the business today. So if you're in Florida, you've heard of these things. They're like cockroaches down there. They're just crawling all over with these little boats. But there's four or maybe five models that you need to know of. There's a 13 high sider, which is like it says, 13 foot. It might be 12.6. It's got a good width transom on it. I think it's in a neighborhood of 40 inches wide or 44. You got a 15 high sider, which is 15 foot 6 inches long. It's 44 inches wide, but it has a narrow transom, which is the biggest strike against that boat because they are all over and they are pretty cheap. Next model up is the Classic, 15 foot 6 inches. It's got about double the transom width of the 15 high sider. Then you've got what might be the flagship of the line, even though they do have a couple bigger boats, but they're kind of in a different class. You've got the LT25. It's, I think, 16 feet. It's wider. It's going to be like 50 or 52 inches. And then you also have an LT10. And I think the LT series comes out of a different shop than the standard high cider series, but in the classic. But the LT10's very similar to a 15 high cider. They say that hull is just a little more efficient, the LT10, and you get a couple more miles per hour out of it than the 15 high sider, but I don't know. So I have a 15 high sider. It's got a 15 two-stroke on it, and it runs 26 with just me. And that's moving pretty good in what amounts to a square stern canoe, but even though that's kind of what they look like, that's really not what they are. They're really a fiberglass boat built in the shape of a square stern canoe. Mine runs about 20 or 21 with a guest. And when you can run over 25 miles an hour to get to wherever you have to go, it's a little bit of a game changer. It opens up things that aren't available to kayakers just for the function of distance. Weight carrying capacity, I'm thinking, is pretty similar. I think mine's rated for 675, 75, 3 pound motor, so about 600 pounds of payload. So two reasonable sized guys with gear. I mean, yeah, you could do it. Three is pushing it, I think. The beauty of the Classic is that wider transom. You can reasonably hang a 25 or 30 off of it and knock down 32 miles an hour. The LT25s are just bigger all around, and you can reasonably hang a 40 off one of them. They'll do very well with a 25 or a 30, but you can put a 40 on it, and with those, it sometimes is hitting 1 mile per hour per horsepower. So with a 40 on there, you probably crack 40 miles an hour, which is really too fast, and it's beyond the scope of this discussion, but I just wanted to let you know what was possible. So I'm on the lookout for a Classic up here. They just are not really available. I'll probably have to take a road trip to Florida. Boat motor and trailer for a Classic, well set up, 4,000 range. I paid $450 for my motor, my boat and trailer, and it didn't have a title for either one. So in Virginia, they've got a program where you can file for an abandoned vehicle title or an abandoned boat title, and I actually was able to get titles for both of mine. But make sure, you know, in your state you can do that. I paid $250 for my 91 Evinrude two-stroke. It needed a bunch of work. I probably have another 2 to 250 in it, but for 500 for those motors, which are known to be pretty much bulletproof, that's a pretty good deal, or you know, a reasonable deal. Just going further down the rabbit hole, in the 1970s, Johnson Evinrude had an 18, a 20, and a 25 two-stroke that weighed in around 83 pounds. I have an 18 1971 two-stroke that weighs 83 pounds. It's 10 pounds heavier than my 15 two-stroke, and it's not running right. It needs carburetor work, but I'm going to strap it on there and see if I can get up towards 30. So that'll probably be a little scary, but I'm going to send it just to see what it could do, and then I might go back to my 15. But I think they're fun little boats. They're infinitely customizable. Pretty much the two or three or four modifications that you see everybody do is they just have little thin plywood transoms that don't go the whole height and width of the transom. Tear that little bit of plywood out and put in a full 1.5 inch thickness transom. That could pretty much hang any motor you'd want to hang off of it. Number two is a false raised floor between the middle seat, the front and the rear seat. I put a plywood floor in, epoxy down, epoxy both sides, fiberglass cloth on the top, and I've got a nice deck I can walk, you know, around in the middle. That's probably the best modification anybody does is the raised floor. The next modification is a grab bar. The grab bar kind of gives you something to hang on to with a tiller motor, and it also lets you mount electronics on it, which is nice. And then the fourth modification that I think almost everybody does is front and rear raised decks. So it's got front and rear seats. What you do is you pretty much build a deck that extends from the edge of the seat forward to the bow, and then in the back from the edge of the seat back to the transom. And it gives you a place to pole for fishing, to stand up on to gig frogs or flounders. And man, they're just really versatile, utilitarian little boats. They're cheap to get into. I have about 2,500 bucks in mine right now. I wouldn't sell it for any less. You could find them maybe for a little cheaper, but I still have to put electronics and lights on mine, like a fish finder. So I even have a little more money to put in mine, and I don't have front and rear decks. But I think the Ginu style boat would serve 90% of this group very well. And it just gets you out of that paddling game, and it opens up a whole lot of territory for you to go up and down. I mean, 20 some miles an hour, you could run a river system in a day, and man, they just for exploring river systems, they're hard to beat. I like them, and I mean the small models you can even car top. It would take an 8-foot bed with a tailgate down probably to car top a 15 high sider, but Guys do it. They get wheels rigged up to their transoms, like beach flotation wheels. I've seen guys rig up kayak carts under them, which is actually something that's on my list because I have a few spots that I can get. It's a good size boat for that body of water, or river system, or swamp, or whatever it is, but I have to dry launch it, and I can get my boat off the trailer by myself. But to drag it to the water, it's 150 pound haul. You really need a kayak cart. So that's something I'm going to be rigging up this summer. So good luck. Let me know if you have any questions.
Thank you, Joe. That is that's great stuff, and that really is a great explanation of all the different factors and models and everything when it comes to skiffs and Ginus. And the only thing that I want to add to that is maybe I was misunderstood a little bit. What I meant by moving up in boat, what I meant to convey was don't try and turn one boat platform into another. In other words, every time I tried to turn a canoe into, I mean, a kayak into a canoe, it just got unwieldy. And when I tried to turn a canoe into a skiff, the canoe would get unwieldy. And when I tried to turn the skiff into, a bigger boat, then the skiff would get unwieldy. So I think there's a sweet spot in every class of watercraft, and the key is to find that sweet spot and not go too low. You don't want to go too little in a class, and you don't want to go too big and complicated and try and make it into something that's not. So anyway, that's all I was trying to say, and I apologize for not making that a little bit more clear. But I do remember that episode, and I was quite animated on it. But anyway, there and Joe, I recently had been emailing with Joe, and I sent him a Ginu that I was looking at, and I said, "Do you think this is worth it?" And he gave me a truly superb breakdown on how he evaluates used boats, and I think that is so important that I'm either going to put it into its own episode, or I'm going to move it into a Patreon-only broadcast, because I think that's going to help a lot of people, especially with the upcoming financial hardships that are about to start happening over the next couple of weeks as people's enhanced unemployment checks and their $600 a week checks start running out, and the mortgage abatements start expiring, and people start really have to coming up with a lot of cash. I think you're going to see a lot of deals on four-wheelers. You're going to see a lot of deals on jet skis. You're going to see a lot of deals on boats. And so my plan is to sit tight for just a few more weeks with cash in hand, and hopefully I can pick up a bargain. Alrighty, now the next topic that I want to discuss is something that I've gotten a lot of communications about from many different people, because this is a serious issue. This is a serious legal issue, a serious constitutional issue, and a serious morality line in the sand type of issue. And I'm gonna be honest with my thoughts on this, and people can call me a hypocrite or throwing in the towel or what have you. Every man has to make his own decision. But starting this coming week, there are a lot of states that have declared mandatory mask wearing. There are states where if you set foot outside your house without a mask, you're subject to arrest. Land of the free. Land of the free. If you leave your house without a mask, there are places where you are subject to 1 year in jail. There are places where they are letting criminals out of jail because they might get sick. And nobody can explain to me if I get thrown in jail for not wearing a mask and then I get let out of jail because I'm not wearing a mask, do I get thrown back in jail for not wearing the mask that I wasn't wearing when I got thrown into jail? Yeah. America. That's the situation we're in. Then there are a lot of companies that are mandating mask wearing. And the question arises, at what point do we continue to put up with this, and at what point do we say no more? And I've had people email me and tell me I'm not complying. If it means I go to jail, I go to jail. If it means I lose my job, I lose my job. And my advice is that every person has to make that decision for themselves. There are people who are young and who are single, and if they lose their job, it might not be that big of a deal. Then there are other people who are married, have families, have kids, mortgages, and if they lose their job, it's a big deal. I would hate to see anyone in this community suffer for taking a stand on this issue. And by suffer, I mean suffer bad. And some people may think that is being hypocritical or folding or giving in or what have you. And to that, my response would be, did the IRA win their struggle against the British by tattooing I'm an IRA man on their forehead or wearing an IRA bumper sticker on their car? No. There is a point at which the force is so overwhelming, that the system is so overwhelming, that in order to continue to live to fight another day, you may have to go undercover. You may have to pretend to comply. Because this type of order, it's not going to remain enforceable for long. You see this already. If there's a store, let's say Walmart is starting Monday, is going to require a mask. If you try and walk in without a mask, they're not going to let you in. Let's say that you live in an area and Walmart has driven every other business out of business. They're the only game in town. You can either go there or you can drive 100 miles. So you got to go there. I guarantee you walk in the store, you have your mask on when you walk in. By the time you get 30 feet in, you let that mask drop down around your neck. Nobody will kick you out of that store. Because you see, it's all a farce. It's all a farce to begin with. Because the guy at the front door, his job is not to follow you around to make sure that you keep the mask on all the time or that it's properly worn. I mean, all you got to do is look at people now. They're wearing them like chin straps. They're covering their lips and have their nose uncovered. They fall down. They pick them up. They flop back down. This is all a joke. It's a farce. And in my opinion, it's not worth falling on your sword for. We're going to need you long term. There are bigger oxen to slay. So I've gotten a lot of emails about that, and that's just my thought. Every person has to decide that for themselves. And I will support you in whatever decision that you make. Now, the final topic on the opening segment of the show tonight, the public segment, is I've got an email from a very good friend of mine who lives in Northern Europe, Eric the Viking. And I've known Eric for a long time, and he's a great guy. And he lives in a very, very socialist country. And he's also a Christian, so you can say he's in, I wouldn't call it enemy territory, but there's not a lot of like-minded people around him. And he sent me an email, and I think this not only applies to Eric, but I think it applies to a lot of people listening to this, and I think it's going to strike a chord here. So let me just read what he said. He said, "Hello, my friend." He said, "Again, I send greetings from the Norwegian fjords. I hope all is well with you and your family. I hope my letter doesn't seem too depressing. It's more of an eye-opening, realistic view. This tribe teaches me a lot every week. Although my country's laws, weather, and fauna are very different to the American continent, there's always good advice to pick up here. Today, I would like to ask the tribe for advice. How do you find fellow tribe members outside of Patreon? I understand that I live in a very different environment and culture, but there must be a way to identify fellow like-minded individuals. A bit of my own background. I am now 36 years old, a white male, recently remarried. I grew up very religious, but the last few years I have distanced from church activities since my own lifestyle and the church policy does not really work well. And let me just interrupt there. Yeah, that's especially in Europe. Besides, you've got the churches here are increasingly politically liberal as well, so I understand that. So he continues and he says, now Clint had a podcast recently where he mentioned one should ask your pastors the critical questions. I realize that I have done this already, and the conclusion is that my church is a bunch of wussies who would obey the government to the last inch. Let me just interrupt there, Eric. The same way here, most of them fold like wet blankets because they don't want to lose their tax-exempt status. So he continues and he says, my distancing from the mainstream and thinking for myself, doing my own research, has really set me free mentally. However, it comes with a price. Losing friends and being shunned by the people you thought you had who had your back in church. And let me just say, yep. When you take that red pill, you're going to find out just how alone you really are. He says, I didn't make many friends outside of church before, and since the norm was to stick with your own, I understand now that making new friends in adult life is not always as easy as it was in my early 20s, especially the kind that you want to rely on. Socializing with people from work is fine and dandy, but they are and will always be liberals. Most people have no interest in preparing for the future, harvesting meat, gathering greens from nature, etc. So do you have any advice for me on how to find like-minded people? Well, Eric, good luck. And that's not an easy thing to do. There's no two ways about that. I can remember when I was young, and I remember my father told me one time, he said, when you get older, he said, if you can count five friends, when you get older, he said, you're lucky. And, of course, he was talking about five real friends, five true friends, the kind that, you know, will be there for you through thick and thin. And I think that's very good advice. So how do you find like-minded individuals, especially in a socialist country? That's a difficult thing right there because nobody in a socialist country is going to get on Facebook and talk about guns or, you know, anti-government stuff or anything like that. I mean, it's hard enough to do that here in the U.S. now. You know, you have to really watch what you say on social media. You can walk in on Monday morning and find yourself fired simply because you made an offhand comment on a thread on Facebook. That's how bad it's gotten, and it's exponentially worse over in Europe. So my advice is to stay away from subjects like survivalism and guns. Those are hot button trigger buzzwords. But instead, take a look at other activities that people such as yourself would enjoy. Backpacking, boating, anything like that, any type of rugged outdoor stuff. And look for groups that are into those things. And then once you get into those groups and you start meeting people, it'll be pretty obvious based on their comments and their conversation how they lean politically. For instance, in the United States here, you get on Facebook, if you get on quote-unquote backpacking groups, they're overwhelmingly liberal. If you get on bushcrafting groups, they're overwhelmingly conservative. There's something about this. There's a difference there. So when you start looking at outdoor activities, when you're looking at backpacking, bushcrafting, in whatever the relevant word may be over there in Norway, try and draw those distinctions where you go to groups that are going to attract more rugged individualists, people who are more ready to be responsible for themselves. So that would be my advice. If you can find groups of people who are into, say, remote camping for days on end, rather than people who are carrying a backpack up and down a trail. The liberals seem to want to carry backpacks on trails. They want to obey the rules. They want to leave no trace. They want to stay in established campsites. A conservative chafes at that. A conservative chafes at having to stay at a designated campsite and apply for a permit. And so when you look at different groups and different activities, whether it's bike riding, motorcycle riding, bushcrafting, boating, look for a common thread of self-reliance, individualism, personal responsibility, and steer away from groups that focus on obeying the laws, obeying the rules, applying for the permits, that sort of thing. And then once you are into the groups of people that are more independent, that's when you can sort of broach the other subjects about, self-sufficiency and survivalism and getting prepared and that sort of thing. And then people will open up. That's how I would go, especially in your situation. And if there's anybody listening that has any advice for Eric, please let me know. You can email me, meattrapper@gmail.com or meattrapper@protonmail.com, and I'll be happy to either forward your feedback to Eric or put you in touch with him directly. So anyway, I hope that was useful, Eric, and thanks for writing. Now, if you are a Patreon member, I want you to stay tuned for the second half of tonight's show. We've got a couple of things to talk about. And if you're not, I'd like to encourage you to consider becoming a member. You can go to patreon.com/meattrapper and get all signed up and become part of the tribe. So thanks for listening, and if you're a tribe member, stick around.
It's just a mask, you guys. Don't be a jerk. It's for the greater good. It's just a vaccine, you guys. Don't be a jerk. It's for the greater good. In 4 months, the U.S. was transformed into an obedient socialist country. Government dictated what events are acceptable to attend. Violent protests that instill fear are okay. But church services, family funerals, and patriotic celebrations are dangerous. And you bought it without a fight. Standing in a graduation line is a safety hazard. Small businesses were forced to close, but crowds to support the corporate money machine at Walmart, Lowe's, and Home Depot are okay. Come on! It's just a mask and safety precautions. How about a little hush money? Here's $2,400 that we stole out of your paycheck in the first place. Enjoy. Buy something with it from a big corporation. Cash is dirty. We can't give change. There's a coin shortage. Use your card. In 4 months, they convince you to use a traceable card for everything. In less than 4 months, government closed public schools, then restructured education under the guise of public safety. In less than 4 months, our government demonstrated how easily people assimilate to guidelines that have no scientific premise whatsoever when you are fearful. In less than 4 months, our government successfully instilled fear in a majority of the population in America that allows them to control every aspect of your life, including what you eat, where you go, who you see, and your toilet paper. And the most dangerous and terrifying part, people are not afraid of the government who removed their freedom. They're afraid of their neighbors, family, and friends. And they hate those that won't comply. It's absolutely terrifying to me that so many people don't question authority. They are willing to surrender their critical thinking skills and independence. They just gave up without thinking, without a fight. Do you know what's coming next? It's just a vaccine. Come on, It's for the greater good! Wait until you're told that you can't enter any store or business without proof of the COVID-19 vaccine. Wait until you can't go to public events or get on a plane without proof of receiving the vaccine. Don't think it's possible? Well, you already allowed the government to say when you can go outside, where you're allowed to go, and accepted a new unproven digital education for your kids in the last 100 days. You followed blindly because you were told to do so. You're kidding yourself if you think the mass behavior won't be repeated with a vaccine or whatever the next step is. I don't follow politics. I don't care about that stuff. I don't think about it. 6 million Jewish people were exterminated in Germany because 97% of the population cowered to populist control. Nobody wanted to think about it. It's easier just to ignore it. But that couldn't happen here in America, right? They got you. Without a thought. Without a fight. Just like France. Just like Russia. Just like China. Welcome, comrade.